Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this May the 28th on the West Coast, and May the 29th on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zone of the United States of America. Well, there's a lot to talk about. I've been following several other websites that have been publishing some information. We've yet to find out if this is actually true, yet we like to be on the cutting edge of releasing new information. And according to the Hal Turner Show and Hal Turner's website, there is an imminent attack, a nuclear attack, an all-out nuclear war planned on North Korea, and this fits into the everyday insanity that we talk about on this show, and I hear others talk about on Patriot networks. Let's just pay attention to this, because if this does transpire, then obviously Mr. Turner has some important connections. B-2 bombers have been seen leaving certain bases and heading for Guam in preparation for this attack. So we'll stay on top of it, and as we find out more facts, or find out if this is just disinformation to divert attention away from what's really going on, we'll let you know. We should be discerning. I haven't heard anything from any of my sources to either corroborate or debunk the story, so we'll assume that it may be true at this point. Well, I've had the great fortune to have a portion of the Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part 6, published in this month's Idaho Observer. It actually went to press and was published on the 20th of May, 2009. And it's an abbreviated version of the internet version of this story, which is posted on my website, directlightproductions.com, if you don't know my web address. And it's under the articles section on the site, virtually reachable from any page on the site. Now, since many of the photographs are showing subtle details, which were originally published on the internet and shown in print media ads, as well as Obama's, and I should say Barack Obama, a.k.a. Barry Satoro, on his campaign website, it was presumed that Obama orchestrated this, and it was done with his consent, his knowledge, and likely his handler's foreknowledge. It was printed on the internet, it was published all over the world, and even seen in his campaign commercials. As I mentioned, it was published all over the place, a series of photos supposedly establishing this genealogy, which in parts 3 through 6 I feel very strongly that I have debunked. I could go into much more detail. In fact, I'm putting together a book of much more information than what I've posted in these articles. In light of the fact that part 6 of this serial article has been published in the Observer, I decided to note that as a preface to the article itself and some commentary, and I would like to read this to my listening audience. Of course, you can go to my website, directlightproductions.com, and read it for yourself. If for some reason you are not listening to this show on the internet and don't have a way to read it, well, I'll save you that trouble. Note to readers, an abbreviated version of this article appears in the May 20th, 2009 edition of the Idaho Observer with an editorial commentary. Due to the nature of the following forensic analysis and the difficulty of reproducing subtle digital photographic manipulations in a black and white newspaper, the publishers agree with the author that this website format lends itself best to a more accurate presentation of the facts. This serial article consists of parts 1 through 6. Parts 1 and 2 explore the bogus genealogy of Senator John Sidney McCain, a.k.a. McCann, and parts 3 through 6 explore the fraudulent genealogy, history, birth, documentation, or lack of, and now photographic fraud of Barack Hussein Muhammad Obama, a.k.a. Barry Satoro. As a reminder to those who might discount the accuracy or validity of this research because it appears on an internet website, White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs was recently asked why Barack Obama would not release his long-form birth certificate or certificate of live birth despite his proclamations of a transparent administration. In his response to WorldNet Daily's White House correspondent, Les Kinsolving, Gibbs laughingly retorted, "Lester, this question in many ways continues to astound me. The state of Hawaii provided a copy with the seal of the president's birth. I know there are apparently at least 400,000 people," and then there was laughter, "that continue to doubt the existence of and the certification by the state of Hawaii of the president's birth there, but it's on the internet because we put it on the internet for each of those 400,000 to download. I certainly hope by the fourth year of our administration that we'll have dealt with this burgeoning birth controversy." End of quote. Evidently, Mr. Gibbs has not yet read The Three Stooges Go to Washington, Parts 3 through 6, or he would not be astounded, nor laughing. The author exposed that fraudulent document in Parts 4 and 5 of the series, and will again, in detail, analyze all of Obama's documentation in Part 7. We, the American people, will see who gets the last laugh. Now, I'd like to point something out here before we bring on tonight's guest, and he may want to comment. I looked at what Robert Gibbs, press secretary of the White House, said, and I could pick apart virtually every single word in every sentence of his response. "This question, in many ways, continues to astound me." Why would it astound him if he knows that they put the document on the web, and that the document is fraudulent? It is fraudulent. And so to be astounded by its fraudulence makes absolutely no sense. The state of Hawaii provided a copy. A copy is not the original, by the way, so it disqualifies the representation again. "With the seal of the president's birth." Now they're saying that the president's birth is the document. When Barack Obama was born, wherever he was born, if he got a certificate of live birth, he was not a president, so it doesn't show the president's birth. Logic dispels that statement. "I know there are apparently at least 400,000 people." Well, they were actually served 400,000 signatures on petitions, and they were refused. Yet they're acknowledging now having received these 400,000 signatures. Actually, I think it was even more than that. It may have been as many as 600,000. But let's keep it at 400,000 for the moment. And that's worth laughing at. "That continue to doubt the existence of and the certification by the state of Hawaii of the president's birth there." Well, those are all lies. First of all, the state of Hawaii has not released the document. They've sealed it. And it's been reported as such on the internet. But it's on the internet because we put it on the internet, so now we know who did it. For certain, we know that the White House the White House press secretary, the administration, Obama's handlers, his people did it. And the reason they did it was for us to download. Now, I saw no reference to anyone downloading it, nor did I see a reference to 400,000 people when it was published. It was published as a representation of fraud and forgery. And in the manner it was presented was itself fraudulent and disqualified the document from being real, per the words on the document. Then he goes on to say, I certainly hope by the fourth year of our administration that we'll have dealt with this burgeoning birth controversy. Why is it a controversy? Why should it be a controversy if the document is real? The controversy's there because the document is a fraud. And let's not even look past this first year, because if we get our way, he won't make it through the end of the year. With that, I would like to bring on tonight's guest. He's a good friend, very good friend. I have the utmost respect for his research and his journalism and his website, educate-yourself.org, and his knowledge, his insight, his intuition, all of that. I haven't heard him play music yet, but he's even a musician. So I welcome back to Evident Footprints my good friend, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. Pleasure to be on with you again. I enjoy these weekly chats we have with each other.
Well, what's your take on this little ditty that I found and inserted in the introduction to my
right.
my
well,
piece? Familiar.
I just heard a passing remark when I was working today. I had AM radio on, and I heard a passing remark. That talk show host was made an allusion to some statement that Gibbs made. It probably wasn't this, but he was not happy with Gibbs' attitude. He said he was very arrogant, and this is what he had to say, and this made this radio host rather annoyed by the way Gibbs behaved. We need to remember, or should observe, Gibbs, like any press secretary, is trained to be in that position. You can bet that they chose someone who's had training in all of the arts of skillfully lying in front of a camera. I remember hearing on the radio some months ago the press secretary who was Bush's press secretary for a long time. He had resigned before the administration had finished, and they had appointed another party. But he came out with a book, and I heard all this conversation on NPR, and they interviewed him. And you would think, in listening to him, that he was the most honest guy in the world, who was being put in a position in which he had to account for things that he wasn't given the proper briefing on, and was misled, and frankly, I forget his name for the moment. He'll probably come to me in a minute, but this guy simply lied through his teeth when Bush launched the invasion of Iraq, weapons of mass destruction and all that. The limp wrist press corps, who usually asks nothing more dangerous than a snowball question, was ABC reporter, I can't remember the details, but he was pushing him on this weapons thing because it had already been shown that the statements that Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Bush had made about these nuclear devices, tubes, I think, from some African country.
Niger, I think they were saying.
Yeah,
they
right,
got,
exactly.
They were getting
just a complete fiction, and he was pressing the press secretary on it. And this guy was Fleischer, Ari Fleischer. I just remembered his name. Anyway, they
another Irishman.
Yeah, they played back the clip that he had said at the time. And he's simply lying through his teeth, and yet when he left the White House and he puts out his book, he's trying to backpedal and make it all sound that he was just relying on information that was given to him, and he was, you know, he's kind of saying, well, I wasn't really in the loop. I was told so-and-so. In other words, he's Mr. Innocent, he's guilty of nothing, and he's just trying to backpedal to make himself look good in the history books. Well, you can bet this guy is as trained in the art of neuro-linguistic programming and CIA tactics and disinformation and doing it with a straight face, so it appears to the unwary that what he's saying is on the level. In this case...
You mean the unwary. there's a difference.
In this case, this guy is posturing himself in a way that he's... he wants to create the idea of he's well-informed on the subject, and these foolish 400,000 are kind of the great unwashed, as it were, and that by laughing it up in a sort of condescending way, he's subliminally telegraphing the idea, oh, come on now, you know, this is ridiculous. Anyone who's serious, wouldn't accept this for a moment. You know, he's sort of mocking the people who are saying this, but he's doing it in a very condescending way. So he seems to be, let's say, both amused and tolerant of this, you know, these 400,000 fools, apparently. That's mm-hmm. the message he's trying to telegraph. Now, yeah. if you're in a battle of information warfare, which he is definitely engaged in, strategically, it's a clever position to take, is it not? Because those who don't know, those who haven't read, you know, details of Obama's fraud, who haven't read your articles, who haven't read Webster's Tarpley book, et cetera, who don't know the details, to this person, you know, this man's going to come across as, that sounds okay to me. So he's not reacting with, alarm at all. He's not reacting with undue denial. So he's sort of admitting it, but at the same time, he's doing it with this posture so that as to be as dismissive as possible of the idea that, you know, Obama doesn't have a legit. So we gotta recognize that. This guy was trained to behave the way he behaved in front of those cameras today. These guys are professional liars. And the public needs to know that when this guy's moving his lips, he's lying. And this guy can play all the games he wants. The truth wins out every time. Now, we've said it, you know, a few times in having these conversations with others, but I'll repeat it again. If the man was legitimate, if he was born in the United States, the controversy never would have arisen because he would have presented it in all those times when people normally have to present a birth certificate, when you get a passport, when he signs up for Selective Service. Well, there are, when you get a driver's license, there's a large number of times when you have to present a birth certificate. I suppose even when you get a Social Security card. So if he had done that, that's what would have been in the record. And the first breath on the internet of anyone saying, well, was he really born in Hawaii? That genuine document, had it existed, would have been on every newspaper, magazine, communique from the Obama, you know, press corps, would have been all over the internet. The controversy never would have come up if he had the proof. And you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to understand this guy doesn't have the documents. And because he doesn't have the document, because he was not born in this country, he's elaborated this obfuscation, wants to ignore it, wants to deny it, and then when 400,000 people, 600,000 sign a petition, he has Gibbs go up on the dais and say something to the effect of, "Oh, we've already covered that. Let's get beyond that." I mean, that's Obama's famous line when people were asking him, "Well, you're going to look into indicting, prosecuting the Bush people." "Oh no, that's 9/11. Oh, that's behind us. We're moving on." So that's how they try to do it.
That's quite obvious, which is the whole reason why I wrote this little piece in front, this commentary. Mm-hmm. It's obvious that he has other people do his bidding for him. Other people lie on his behalf. Now, what's going to be the outcome? Well, now we have an admission here, you see. He says, "We did this." Okay. Previously, no one would would take credit for it, right? I'm privy to a call. In fact, I heard this call live to Howard Dean's office at the Democratic National Committee. I should probably write about this because this was pretty interesting. An acquaintance called and wanted me to overhear this conversation. He made the call, spoke to Dean, asked to speak to Dean. Dean was unavailable for a call from this individual, the secretary told him. And he proceeded to say that, there are lawsuits regarding this documentation or lack of documentation. What is the stance of the Democratic National Committee? And this secretary said, "Oh, we've handled that problem in the courts." That was a response. Now, did you hear anything about that?
No, of course not.
Anything legitimate in regard to the Democratic National Committee?
Right.
Or the Federal Elections Commission?
Right.
Or any of the state secretaries in the 50
right.
states?
All those people had the responsibility to ensure the legitimacy of Obama, and they all failed. And
yes.
that woman who made that remark is equally culpable of failure in for duty, the duty of the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. These people are criminally liable for failing in their duty. And I'm sorry, little throwaways like, "Oh, we've already taken care of that." That's not going to cut it. That's not going to cut it. We're not going to let them dismiss it with cheap shots like that. So that's why we're talking about it tonight.
So in essence, my initial purpose for writing this preface was just to let the readers know that portions of this article have been printed, because of the difficulty of putting a color photograph into a black and white newspaper. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. And the computer screen shows in much greater detail the finer points that I'm stressing in terms of shadowing and special effects that were used to create these phony compilations that are being represented as actual photographs. They're not photographs, or there are combinations of photographs if one wants to be specific, with a lot of poor drawing and video editing included.
Yeah.
So my reason for that was to alert the readers, and it was just in the course of keeping up with what's going on that I came across this story. Since I don't watch much TV, I didn't see the White House press conference where this statement was made.
Right.
But it's certainly worth making, and it's kind of ironic that the White House reporter for WorldNet Daily is named Les Kin solving.
that is very funny.
And when I looked at the name after I had published this on my site, it struck me.
Yes.
Kin solving. Less yes. kin solving, actually.
Yeah, less kin solving. That's so ironic. Wow.
Yes. So not that we have to belabor this anymore. This was just a public service announcement and a little bit of analysis, because they're stepping all over themselves, aren't they?
Yes. Yes. And it won't go away, but similar to the, you know, the 9/11 inside job protests, you know, it will continue to dog Obama. They'll probably do exactly what they did on 9/11, simply ignore the controversy, ignore those who are protesting. You'll never see a word about it in mainstream media, of course. So my guess is that it will never bear fruit in terms of the government is so corrupt, the judiciary, the legislature, et cetera, that I don't expect, you know, any, I don't expect, for instance, to be, have a genuine investigation from any quarter, and I don't expect them to be, you know, drummed out of office as a result of it. But I do expect or hope that the American public will continue to first become aware of the fact that he is an illegal alien, criminally posing as the president of the United States. And I hope this chorus grows in America. And if enough people did get on board, then he would be forced from office. Yes.
Oh, I was just going to say, as an addition, now, okay. there's a piece that I posted on my Breaking Stories site. It's called Prayer for the Nations. I had read this some time ago, and it came to my attention again today. So I put this up for people to read. What's interesting is when one reads this, it's a very nice-sounding prayer, basically appealing to God for all the things that we have done that are wrong. And yet the people who supported this prayer and publicized it quite a bit are all Illuminati shills.
Yeah.
So we need to use our discernment. And, you know, the prayer sounds great, but it's like putting what they're doing in your face in the form of a prayer. Mm-hmm. These people go to no end to propagandize everyone.
Yes.
And I know we have another topic planned for this evening, which is a follow-up on your previous shows.
Yes.
And it's very important information. So I just wanted to let people know that, you know, prayer is important, and discerning the truth is important. And in future shows, we're going to get into that more, so that you can distinguish between the real deal and those that are masking themselves.
Yep.
Let's say those that pose as Christians who are not Christians.
Right.
And the propaganda has been to politicize everything. We've witnessed our religion being politicized. It has been for several hundred years. And we've certainly seen that in the medical community now. It's being politicized. Everything is becoming a law in terms of what is really a sovereign right, and that's self-determination. So I want to allow you now to go into, you know, the topic that you and I had discussed.
Thank you. Actually, for the, you know, the balance.
Unless you
of the
have
show,
another comment about
well, I have
what we've been
one
talking
more comment. I just want to say the balance of the show, though, I do want to talk about taking care of yourself at home, and I'm going to be focusing on the information of Huldah Clark. It's a wonderful topic, and I look forward to sharing some information. The one thing, last thing is just, I'll just take a moment or two. I did not know you were going to make a reference to the situation in North Korea. You mentioned something that Hal Turner show had said. I don't have a lot of strong belief in Hal Turner's information. However, mm-hmm. I will say this, though. Z.S. Livingstone, who who's a writer who I feature on my website, did send me a short article which I posted on Sunday, which was referring to the what we were told in the media was a North Korean underground a nuclear test.
Mm-hmm.
And there was associated with it what's being reported on many articles as unusual, strange earthquake activity. I posted this note Sunday night, I believe, if I recall. I believe it's pretty much Sunday night.
Yeah, I was unaware of that, just for your information.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you this, you know, what he essentially said. You can read it. It's on my latest articles there. It's six items on the top.
Okay.
What he said is that he's picking up that it was not an underground blast, but rather a surface blast. He said it was not in the kiloton range as reported, but rather in the megaton range. And he says he does not believe it was a North Korean bomb because they don't have the megaton capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was staged and blamed on them, then, in other words.
That's the essence of what he's saying, yes.
Yeah.
So I had, you know, I just trust him. He gets stuff that I don't get. So if he sent it to me, he was serious about it, I put it up. And I went there, I took a look at Google Earth, and I at least zeroed in on the area. Now, naturally, the pictures that I'm seeing from Google weren't, you know, taken that day. They were taken at some previous time. But I did put a couple Google Earth shots up there with arrows to point where the location was that was reported by the IRIS system. So I wanted to mention that to you, since you mentioned what you did.
Yeah, I'm on your site now looking at this, and I was totally unaware that you had done this. So that's
right.
Just synchronicity there.
Yeah, synchronicity. So since you did, you know, mention the Hal Turner thing, which was complete news to me, I wanted to get to. So it could be that it was a hit, if you will, it could be that they're playing a game here. They're playing a game, and North Korea's pretending it was a test, but it was actually a hit. I don't know, but let me
give you just a tad of background on what might be going on here.
Okay.
Look at the money, right? The bottom line is money and power.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what they're after. Now, I'm not saying North Korea. We've had all these recent visits by the Bushes to North Korea. In fact, there was one made just before the Olympics, before W left office. There was one, it was either the end of July or the first week of August, 2008. Okay, and we tracked bank accounts during that time, and there was a lot of bank activity going on, and there were trillions of dollars put into the North Korean Central Bank, which coincided with that. Now, China is in two factions, basically, and most people aren't aware of this. You know, when you think of China and you think of politics, people think communist. Okay, the communists control China, but not everyone in China is of a communist faith, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Okay, because it's a political ideology that's enforced through corruption and military oppression. Basically, that's it in the nutshell. Now, that's what they're building here in the United States. We're witnessing the same thing, but they don't tell us that, you see. They talk about China is this evil beast, and I'm not saying whether China is or not. I think it's governments that are evil.
Oh, absolutely.
The people themselves
are
not.
Good people, yeah.
Yes, okay. So by provoking North Korea, and the payoffs have already gone down. After these first rocket launches that took place last year that were highly publicized, we had two series of rocket launches. One was announced and really built up, and the other one was reported after it happened.
Yes.
The first one resulted in a $50 million payment to Eel, and he received that likely through the Bushes, and that had to do with all of this embezzlement that's going on and all the bank fraud that's going on in the trillions of dollars. In conjunction with that, the information was released that $25 trillion had been funneled secretly into bank accounts in India as well. And then we had this India terror, so-called false flag terror event at the hotel, okay, in Mumbai. You remember that?
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Okay. So this is just a continuation. You see, I'm just connecting some dots for you and for the listening audience. That this went on, and this is now where they are. Don't you think this is about bank fraud? Don't you think this is to now sort of put political pressure, worldwide political pressure, on China? And that's because China's been ripped off trillions of dollars by these corrupt politicians here in Washington and by the central bankers. They had several times contributed $4.5 trillion to get the payments out to the participating countries, and a lot of this had to do with private programs related to what's called Nasara. Okay, and it's bank corruption. This is a diversion from the bank corruption. Okay, that's what this is about. The bottom line, and if it provokes a war, so what? You see, that's their goal is to create war everywhere. That's their plan anyway.
Right.
Okay, and they might as well do it in a way where they force China into a corner. Okay. And that's what's going on here. This is blackmail, is what it is, literally.
Wow.
Okay. So I don't mean to interrupt you any more. There's really not much more I can say about it at this point, other than to say in relation to what I referenced from the Hal Turner article, knowing that I'm suspicious of the source of the information too. But it's interesting that we're hearing this from several different sources now.
Right.
So go ahead, please.
Okay, so we'll talk about, spend the rest of the show, though, talking about taking care of your health yourself at home. It's important to emphasize the need for this. Why? Number one, the people we go to for health care, the majority of us, are physicians who have been trained in a medical model that we call allopathy, and they prescribe drugs as a way to treat disease conditions. Now, of course, when I was younger, I didn't know that. I just, went to the doctor, and so I didn't know there was more than one type of doctor. I suppose few of us did, because we were so inundated with allopathic doctors that the only different type of doctor I knew about, at least when I was younger, was somebody who called himself a chiropractic. And the only reason I knew about that is because my father had received a lot of help and relief from a chiropractic after many years, 15, 18 years of having tremendous back pain as a result of an accident. He broke his back working in a war factory in World War II. And he had been going to conventional allopathic doctors for all those years, and they wanted to do exploratory surgery on his back, but they told me he had a 50-50 chance of being paralyzed as a result of it. So he said, "Oh, no, I can't take the chance. I got to work." So they gave him a metal corset to wear to keep his, And he hated it. He hated all those years he wore that metal corset, but that's all they could do for him. So he gave him painkillers and all that. And finally, somebody, a friend of his, told him about a guy, you know, type of doctor he never heard of, chiropractic. He said, you should go. He said, so he found somebody in the town we lived in. Turns out he was one of the best in the town. He was, in fact, the president of the local chiropractic organization there, and you know, he was in his late 40s, early 50s at the time, but he was good, and he was so good that he worked on my father, gave him treatments for 1 year, and my father talked about, and he did such a swell job. My father got rid of that metal corset, threw it away, didn't need it again for the rest of his life, and he thought of this man like a god, because he relieved them of this pain that he was carrying for 18 years following this accident that occurred, I think it was in 1944. And so he thought of this man so highly. And so that's how I came to find out about chiropractic, because I went to see him myself, because my father was so impressed with him and whatever it was at the time I was having some trouble with, and this guy gave me some treatments. And I remember, again, I'm a younger guy at the time, when I went to see a regular physician that I normally would see, a family, somehow in the conversation of talking to him, he asked me, I was telling him what a good response my father got from this guy. And, you know, I said, you know, he did this for me. And this guy, I expected the man to say something. Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. No. Very critical, hypercritical, and, like, I couldn't get over it. I had no idea why this family doctor had such a negative attitude about someone who was in this chiropractic field. Of course, I was had no idea what the game was at that point. Mm-hmm. I was truly perplexed. You know, I of course I didn't say anything, but I'm thinking to myself, what? You know, this guy's like, you know, getting negative on him, saying, oh, they're all quacks and don't waste your money. And, I mean, very untypical comments from him. You know, this man is normally very pleasant, avuncular, sweet, you know, talking kindly, you know, and for him to suddenly turn like that, holy, you know, mackerel, I'm thinking to myself, what?
In all medical professions, Ken, there are two types of doctors. There are those that prescribe medicine and prolong the patient's suffering. They don't lead the patient to healing. They cause the symptoms to be tolerable, we'll say.
Yeah. Okay?
It's not about healing in that type. And the other type are totally devoted to what you're talking about. Natural ways, solutions.
Right.
And I would think, instead of looking at, well, I have a patient. You know, it's like the attorney drawing out the case over years when they can handle it in 5 minutes by telling the truth. Yeah. That it doesn't even have to go to court.
Right.
But these doctors that prolong the suffering by saying, well, try this medication and you know, this is a muscle relaxant and this will allow you to move easier. Well, it's going to cause other problems, but they're not telling you that. They're not going to tell you about the addiction that you're going to get, and that is going to create, let's say, tangential types of health issues. Maybe not immediately, but down the road they will. And all along, the patient is not cured. Right. They don't experience healing.
Right.
And then you have the other side. So we're making that distinction here. I just want to clarify that for the listening audience.
So, yes. Okay, so I won't go through the, let's say, the gradual awakening and metamorphosis that I personally experienced, but it's enough to say that those instances when I was, you know, younger, started me on the road towards, you know, natural health, alternative health information, because it was clear to me that this chiropractic did wonderful things, and it was equally clear this conventional doctor that we normally would see for all our little, had such a negative attitude, and that made no sense to me other than make me want to look into this alternative health world. And what I did is that I mentioned in a letter to the editor, to somebody a few days ago, I read Linus Pauling's books in the early 70s. You know, he came out a very famous book around 1970 about vitamin C. And, of course, he did many books during the 70s and even 80s, but his first big one was the one on vitamin C. And I had read it, and I was greatly impressed by it. I was subscribing to a net magazine called Prevention Magazine. A guy named Rodale was the editor of that, and he was talking about supplements and everything to do with taking care of your health through natural means rather than using drugs. So that started me on the path. Okay, I read a lot of books since. I started to really get serious about reading this stuff around the mid-80s. I remember I read a very important book by Hans Nieper in 1985, very important book. Had to do both about free energy, but also about a lot of suppressed alternative medicine therapies that I didn't know about. So into the lady, I was reading Gary Null's book, for instance, in the 80s. Bob Atkins' book, and then I was getting into the early 90s, mid-90s, I was reading a lot of books about everything, particularly Ed McCabe really opened my eyes around 95, talking about oxygen therapies, ozone, and the like. So I've done a lot of reading in the interim. The most important series of books, though, that I've read to teach you how degenerative health takes place, how to prevent it, and how to treat yourself at home are the books of Hulda Clark. Now, Dr. Hulda Clark is not a physician, but she has a PhD. She's a very highly trained person. Biology, virology, chemistry. This woman has a number of degrees. And her research is simply, in my opinion, the most important discoveries of the 20th century. And what makes her truly unique is that she gives away all of her discoveries in her books. Had she wanted to make a fortune and patent stuff or create proprietary devices, sources of information, treatment, whatever. Mm-hmm. She could have made a lot, great deal of money. But she is a truly selfish, selfless individual in that she gives away all of her most important secrets in her books. She doesn't hold anything back. She writes in a way that the common layperson can read and understand, doesn't try to use heavy medical jargon. And she makes her books copyright free. In other words, anybody is free to copy the book, post it on the internet, as long as you're not charging for it, of course. And that's another unusual thing. Now, her first book came out in 94. It was called The Cure for All Cancers. And she discovered many fabulous things, but what she said in those books, which was really big new information at the time, was that people who develop disease conditions, especially cancer, it's always accompanied by other things being present. What she found is that there was a large range of species of microparasites in the body that always accompany certain disease conditions like cancer. There's other things that accompany the cancer. There's always solvents in the body, and there's always metals. Those three things, the solvents, the metals, and these microscopic parasites work in tandem with each other to allow the taking hold and the growth and the proliferation of many disease conditions, or most disease conditions, and especially cancer. So that was
might one of those metals be aluminum?
Well, yes, all of the metals that are known, you know, to be toxic to the body, that the body normally doesn't use. There's a mm-hmm. large number of them, but yes, of course it includes aluminum, yeah. mercury, and there's. And where we get these solvents, where we get the metals, has very much to do with the modern diet and modern body products. So, for instance, we go to a dentist, and he puts amalgams, you know, in our mouth, and they're made up of a mixture of mercury. There's some silver in there, but there's a number of other metals that are in smaller amounts, but they're intended to make the amalgam hard, so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't deform when you chew, etc. So they add a number of metals that all of them are toxic to the body. What we found out, particularly with the work of Hal Huggins, which he began to come out with this info in the late 80s, 86, 87, something like that, mm-hmm. is that all so-called silver fillings, but amalgam is the more correct term, leach the metals into the body. They leach into the saliva, and then therefore you swallow it, but also they leach through the tooth itself. You know, the tooth is not a solid block of granite, okay? Mm-hmm. It's porous. It has a number of microtubules running through it called dentine tubules that are lined with living cells. It's mm-hmm. nourished by a blood supply and a nerve supply. So this metal literally leaches down into the tooth, and from the tooth it migrates into the jaw, and from there it gets into the blood system of the body. It winds up in capillaries, then it's circulated throughout your body. Okay, so Holda discovered a number of magnificent things, and she was able to detect the presence of not only the large variety species of bacteria, virus, mold, fungus, and these parasites, etc., in the body, with a device, a very simple device that she developed with her son. Her son was something of an electronics buff, and she was talking to him about this device in which she wanted to see if it was possible to detect the presence of these pathogens or metals
or
in the body,
yeah,
by creating what's called a resonance circuit. Now, the name of the device that she invented is called there's two ways of pronouncing it. One way is synchrometer, and the other way to pronounce it is synchrometer, okay? But what it means, or the device is extremely simple, but she and her son invented this thing, and they deserve full credit. They didn't try to patent it. She tells you how to make your own in her book. You can make it out of very simple, basic electronic components, and she shows you how to do it using a shoebox just to make it, you know, simple for the average person mm-hmm. with no electronic ability to assemble it themselves using jumper wires and so forth. Mm-hmm. Naturally, if you have electronic skill, you would, you know, make it in a much smaller project box and get
a breadboard and all that.
Breadboard and all that. But she wanted to have the absolute novice be able to do it at home. So she shows you how to do it, you know, this simple way using alligator clip, lead wires, and the like. Okay. The principle of the device is this. You can hold a handhold and be part of the circuit of the synchrometer. So essentially the energy that's running through the synchrometer would also run through you. Now, she could put a vial. There's two plates, and they have a switch that can either join the two plates together when you throw the switch one way, or isolate one plate or the other, okay? So
mm-hmm.
it has this switching function. She could set it up so that the circuit of the synchrometer has a small audio amplifier in it, that in a speaker, so that when you apply the probe and you get what's called a resonance response, mm-hmm. you'll hear a pattern of four notes or so, okay? And you have to memorize the pattern, and you have to learn how to elicit the particular pattern by probing at a certain location on your hand and using the probe in a very specific way and applying a very specific pressure. It takes time and practice to acquire this skill. It doesn't mm-hmm. happen in an hour or two. You have to work on it for a few months to get the ability to do it competently.
Okay, it's like learning to tune in into your own frequency, in other words.
In a way. But yeah. what is happening, however, though, is that these tones are a tip-off to a condition we call resonance. Now, here's the simple version of the explanation of what the synchrometer does. If you have a vial with a sample of, let's say, paramecium, just to give us a name of a parasite, in it, that paramecium is vibrating at a particular frequency. It's called its resonant frequency. All living things and all dead things vibrate at a particular frequency. Everything in existence has an identifying resonant frequency. Living things have a wider bandwidth of frequency. So let's say if the paramecium is alive, it might have a bandwidth of, I'm just guessing at the numbers here, but let's say 10,000 kilocycles. Let's say its resonant frequency is, I'm making up numbers, I don't know what it is. Let's say it's 300,000 cycles, which is the same as 300 kilocycles, okay? So let's say the paramecium, while it's alive, will display a response to frequency from, let's say, 290 kilocycles up to 310 kilocycles. So I guess that's 20. Okay, so let's say its bandwidth is 20 kilohertz when it's alive. However, when it dies, the bandwidth greatly shrinks. Maybe it'll shrink down to 5 kilohertz width or less, perhaps 1 kilohertz, okay? So now, when you do a test, it only vibrates from 299 kilohertz, let's say, to 301 kilohertz, okay? So you can, in fact, by knowing how to recognize a wide bandwidth response versus a narrow bandwidth response, you can determine whether the paramecium you're testing for in some organ in your body is either alive or dead. You can identify every known pathogen to man, whether it's virus, whether it's prions, whether it's bacteria, or more organized colonies of fungus, or whether it's as large as a parasite, by its resonant frequency. Using this device, she was able to determine both the presence of the pathogen she was looking for, or the metal. If there was metal in her little sample vial, let's say aluminum, if when you did the testing response and switched the plate in and out with the test sample of aluminum, which is in a little glass vial, has a little bit of water in it, if you got a positive resonance response, that means you had that metal in you, let's say aluminum. It's in your body. It does not tell you the quantity of metal or the quantity of parasites in you. It just tells you whether it's present or not. But that information is so necessary to diagnosis and treatment that, yeah, it'd be nice if we can know the quantity too, but it's not necessary. Knowing whether it's there or not is the critical point. Now, Holder found that in all cases of cancers, there are certain markers that accompany the cancer tumor, or whether even if it's a blood cancer or it's a tumor type cancer, certain markers were always there. If the cancering process had been arrested or stopped, these markers are no longer there. That's important. Now, conventional allopathic oncologists, they have types of tests. One's called an AMAS. when a cancer is active, you'll get a positive on an AMAS, and when the cancer is not active, you'll get a negative. So they, you know, the Orthodox world has some tests along these lines, but the tests that Hulda developed are far more accurate and far more revealing about the nature of where the cancer tumor is inactivated or is active, et cetera, besides whether it's on or off. So she was able to always detect the presence of a particular chemical substance that, when she did a synchrometer test for this substance, if the person tested positive, it meant the person has an active cancer growing in their body. No question about it. And if she, let's say, did a therapy, and then she did the test for this particular chemical, and it comes back zero, that cancering process has been arrested. That's what it means. Now, she was able to essentially map out the entire genesis process of cancer from its very beginning to the, you know, to the fourth end stage prior to the, you know, to the death of the patient by using this synchrometer device. It was a mind-boggling discovery.
Now, if I can insert a comment here for the listening audience, there are people out there saying, well, if this is true, what you're describing, then this would be out there and people would be getting treated for this. Or at least you'd be hearing about that, right? So I'm just underscoring the fact that this information is routinely suppressed.
Correct. Right. So in this case, she, of course, puts the information in her books, and those who read the book and study it carefully, the light will go off, just like it went off for me when I first read her book. I told myself, in fact, one of the very first newsletters I ever, you know, actually I started my website in 1996, even though the current domain name started in 98, but I did start in 96. And the very first newsletter I wrote was a review of Hulda's book, the one I'm talking about now, because these discoveries are mind-boggling. And as you know, and as people might suspect, there are more than dozens, there are hundreds of successful alternative therapies that work very, very well, that are suppressed, ignored, kept from the public, intentionally not mentioned by, you know, newspapers, on you know, TV news shows, reports. They always have something, the latest, you know, discovery from John Hopkins, or, you know, whatever the allopathic world is discovering. You'll always see it on the 6 o'clock news, you know, and the latest breakthrough in cancer research and blah, blah, blah. You'll never read about a Hulda, or you never hear a Hulda Clark breakthrough or a Hans Niebuhr breakthrough or any of the other great natural medicine researchers of the 20th century who are unknown to the majority of people because they've been suppressed. So yes, of course, this information is not made available in any mainstream formats. So Hulda used this device to map out the manner in which cancers begin. All cancers, not just, you know, a certain number, all cancers begin, the very beginning of it. And it's rather surprising when you read the, you know, etiology of how cancers begin. It's different from the conventional model, you know, we've been taught by conventional medicine, are quite different, but it's quite accurate. How do we know it's accurate? Because the synchrometer verifies the presence of each stage in the development. So here we have a tool that the layman can make himself at home. You can buy a made unit. There's a number of people that, you know, have professionally factory built synchrometers, you know, the $300, $350 or so, some less, some more. Or you can make your own from scratch. The information is available in a book. But the importance of the discovery is that if you train yourself to use it. And it does take months of training. There's a tape made available by the Hulda Clark Research Associate Group. It's still available. It was a tape made in 1996 by a wonderful synchrometer expert by the name of Carmen Myers. She lives in San Diego. I was just talking to her on the phone last week, and because I wanted to catch up on her latest info, and I wanted to, you know, make her services known to readers on my website, et cetera, because she's simply, you know, there are many competent today synchrometer operators in America, but everyone could learn how to be an expert in synchrometer uses, because if they did, they would have the most thorough laboratory, analysis laboratory available to them in the world, right in their own home. And it costs, if you make it from scratch, using Hulda Clark's, you know, shoebox routine, it's going to cost you all of $15 or $20 in parts. I mean, this is a really heavy layout of money. And if you learn how to do this, you don't need to go to a lab for any tests. Well, okay, let me modify that. It's still useful in certain circumstances to get what's called blood panels. Mm-hmm. But you can do most tests yourself at home with a synchrometer to guide you in your treatment. Let's say you had cancer. Well, you learn how to use a synchrometer, or you can send a saliva sample to a, you know, someone who's competent in it and will, for a fee, give you analysis back and, you know, give you a report, call you on the phone, however they do it. But you can find out if the therapies you're doing are arresting the cancer or not. What you'll learn in Hulda Clark's books, she has 6 books, I believe, to date. 4 of them have cancer in the title. And, of course, they're talking about cancer cure and prevention. But the book is filled with a lot of other information that's not necessarily just about cancer. If you really want to absorb Hulda's stupendous library of information, the only intelligent thing to do is to simply buy all her books. I mean, they cost all of $22 each. I mean, that's a lot of money, you know? So for, you know, $150 or so, you have the most valuable medical treatment library in existence in your home to study and to turn to for reference when you learning how to take care of yourself. Because this is what her books teaches you. She teaches you how every single disease condition starts, why it starts. She explains everything to you. How to prevent it by not laying the, you know, the groundwork for the condition to take hold and grow and fester. But if you have it, she'll tell you how to get out of it. Now, you can't take shortcuts if you're in serious difficulty with cancer or other life-threatening AIDS, HIV, etc. Very serious life-threatening diseases. You can't willy-nilly apply her stuff and notice, oh, gee, I am getting results from that. Oh, gee, I feel so much better today. Let me go back to that, you know, to the pretzels and beer and ice cream and cake. It doesn't work that way. If you're in serious health, you have to become totally devoted to recovering your health, because once you've seriously compromised your immune system and a serious disease takes hold, you have a lot of work to do to reestablish your immunity, to cure yourself of the disease. And let me say this, this is what I've said in my essay, that a very first essay I put on my website in the introductory notes when I first wrote my website. There is no such thing as incurable disease. That's a myth that the orthodoxy has been perpetuating for the last 100 years or so, because there are a lot of disease conditions which they cannot cure. So they sanctimoniously declare these as incurable diseases. But that's because they are not the most adept people to be working on these conditions.
Or in some cases, in conjunction with some diseases, they do know the cures. They just suppress the cures.
That's true. In many cases, that's true.
You know, for the sake of the listening audience, because there are some people that are hearing this sort of thing for possibly the first time in their life, when you discuss potential cures and you discuss what allopathic medicine determines as the route they're going to take in addressing disease and all diseases, why get rid of the patient when you can keep the patient under your control and extract large amounts of money for lots of people?
Yes, that is at the heart of the orthodox medical scam. That's what it is. And I've said that, and again, the very first essay that I wrote on my website, it's in the introduction, it's still there. I essentially parallel that notion that everyone in the alternative health movement is aware of this, is that orthodox medicine, the pharmaceutical giants, fund the major medical schools, grants to research universities, etc., all come from the pharmaceutical industry. So they guide the direction of both the curriculum and the protocols for treating people. And it's all drug-based. And as you said, they have been in the business of milking a cash cow for, you know, the best part of the 20th century. Abraham Flexner did a report on behalf of an Illuminati, you know, biggie, Andrew Carnegie, in 1907. And they wanted to put other alternative health practitioners out of business, including homeopathy and other non-allopathic disciplines. The Flexner Report essentially was a con job, you know, whitewash, on behalf of the pharmaceutical industry that essentially condemned every other form of treatment as quackery except allopathy. So they decided with the Flexner Report, which was presented to Congress, and Congress, you know, put a stamp of approval on it, that the AMA, which is a union really, the American Medical Association, would be the gatekeeper to decide on which schools would be certified as competent, legitimate, and therefore you can get a license from, in which you couldn't. So naturally, they put the stamp of approval on all allopathic training curriculums, and they disapproved of everything else. So for the best part of the 20th century, when I was growing up, you know, I didn't hear about homeopathies or naturopaths or Chinese traditional medicine. I didn't hear about that. The only thing we knew is the doctor. They didn't put the word, we are allopathic doctor, in front of their name. They just called themselves Dr. So-and-so.
Yes.
So this entire country has been snookered for the best part of the 20th century, denying us these other disciplines, which only began to grow once again in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s. The chiropractics sued the AMA, and they won. I think they won in 87. And that allowed, you know, much more advertising and so forth that previously they couldn't do. So now, you know, the general public is beginning to see that there's a much wider range of treatment available than the allopathic model. Now we know with certainty that allopathy is the worst possible way to treat conditions. Why? For the reasons you said. They just manage the conditions, they suppress symptoms, but they actually drive the disease condition deeper into the body. And you wind up with greater disease of greater depth in terms of, you know, impact on your lifespan, et cetera, as time goes by. We've all had a lot of relatives who've died as a result of treatment by the allopathic world. How many relatives have died of cancer that went to chemo and radiation and all the nine yards and, you know, didn't make it anyway.
Yeah.
And yet,
Ken, I want to interrupt with something here, and I want to come back to what you're talking about. This is in regard to what you're saying, too. And in no way is this to detract from the importance of Hulda Clark's discoveries. I've mentioned this individual on several other shows, possibly even with you on a show, Stanislav Brzezinski, who is operating a sort of a cancer clinic, if you want to call it that, at least a practice
in Houston.
With cancer in Houston. Yes. His story was covered by a Los Angeles Times writer who actually became an advocate for what Brzezinski was doing. And basically, the FDA went after him on three separate occasions in an attempt to debunk his work because he was curing patients. Now, he developed what he eventually called a polypeptide that's found in urine, which he named antineoplastins. And he said that if he could identify what the deficiency in a person was by examining the existence of these antineoplastins in their urine. Now, he's been, or it's been attempted even on the internet to debunk Brzezinski by a Saul Green, Ph.D. Now, we don't even know that Saul Green, Ph.D. is a doctor. But let's say for the sake of argument that he is. Why would he go on an attack? You see, this becomes the prototypical attack of the person, then attack of the message. And it's the first of three stages in trying to eliminate higher knowledge from reaching the public's mass consciousness. Okay, yes. So we're looking at propaganda. When this guy, what does he do? He looks to see his accreditation, or he never did a study, official study in the university on this. I mean, why approach it that way? That's as if to say that Nikola Tesla and his understanding of flying saucers and his inventions in that area are not valid because they weren't taught in school, or that he didn't do any experiments in school. It's an utterly ridiculous argument. And I take notice that Mr. Green's last name is the same as one of the aliases used by Dr. Joseph Mengele, which has been brought up by many of the sex slave victims and mind control victims.
Yes.
Now, we don't know for certain that there's a direct relationship there, but I find it kind of interesting that Dr. Green's name comes up here.
Yes.
So here's another example of someone since 1976 who has been healing people through these treatments has been quashed, you know, not just by the media, but by definitely the pharmaceutical company. This slant is typical of what pharmaceutical companies do. So I wanted to point that out.
Well, thank you. I am familiar with Brzezinski's work, and when he came under attack, I did, you know, post stories, and I wrote about it at the time. I'm guessing at the time frame, somehow the late 90s is occurring to me, 98, 99, through there, I remember I also hosted articles. He needed to raise money for a defense fund, and I put that up at the time. I'm well aware of who Saul Green is. There are other individuals whose names might occur to me who are associated with him, but I don't think he's a medical doctor. If I recall, and someone will probably correct me after this show is over, but if I recall, he's either a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and I could be confusing him with Stephen Barrett, but I'm not sure he's a licensed, and I'm not sure he's even still alive today, but he was an active critic.
Yeah, he supposedly died, I think, in 2007.
Okay, Okay.
If I'm not mistaken.
Okay. He was the, let's say, elite. Not only Brzezinski, he went after many people. I remember Dr. Joseph Revici in New York was also an excellent. Saul Green was kind of the lead attack dog with a national group. Actually, it's a very small group, but they have tentacles that reach into every medical board in this country. I'm trying to remember the name of them. They use the word research in their title, and it's sort of a quackery type busting group, you know, and they self-describe themselves as these guardians for the public against quacks, you know, and they're kind of they posture themselves in writing and their website, etc., as being these you know, investigators that are, and this Saul Green was the you know, the chief attack dog with that group.
The website that this was on was quackwatch.com.
Okay, right. Now, that's quackwatch.com is Stephen Barrett's site.
Yes.
Barrett is one of these fellows of this group. He's also an attack dog who had jumps on virtually. Here's an interesting thing. If you were to go to that website, quackwatch.com, Stephen Barrett is actually a he lost his license as a psychiatrist, although he continues to call himself a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
He is a shill, obviously, clearly, for the pharmaceutical industry, as was Saul Green. That's their job, is to, you know, stir the pot and to attack alternative medicine practitioners. If you want to find out the name of everyone involved in talking, of has books, does articles, does websites, does talk shows, in any way is involved in promoting alternative health, go to quackwatch.com because the name will be listed there. If you're wondering what all the disciplines that exist in the world under natural medicines, you know, in other words, non-drug therapies to treat the body, go to quackwatch.com because every single one of them will be listed there without exception. I don't care. Just try to find it that you won't say. And what you'll see is that in every case, for all those disciplines, those therapies, as well as all those practitioners or promoters or advocates, let's say, they'll all be on QuackWatch. So it's kind of a resource of the natural medicine world. It's all there. Because what this insane individual, Stephen Barrett, says is that it's all quackery. Without exception, he denounces virtually every single modality of natural, non-drug medicine as quackery, and every single individual who advocates, speaks about it, writes about it, publishes books, magazine articles, or whatever, is a bona fide nut case, according to him, who doesn't know what he's talking about, who's promoting quackery, snake oil, drivel, blah, blah, blah. I mean, if you want to read a distorted mind, go to quackwatch.com and examine the mind of Stephen Barrett. This guy ought to be in a rubber room. He's so off the chart. And yet, I've heard it many times on the radio. He'll come on mainstream radio shows, and he very calmly denounces, you know, the Brzezinskis of the world, the Hulda Clarks of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Hulda, too, has been dragged through the court system in a very similar way that Brzezinski has.
Now, to wrap up the show here, because we're low on time, actually, we owe time now. can you encapsulate the results of these publications? What impact people are experiencing health-wise as a result of her work?
It's truly phenomenal. If you invest the time to study her books, by the way, on my website, at the links at the top of each page, about in the middle row of those links, you'll see one that says Dr. Hulda Clark Books. When you click it on, it lists all her books. It lists the phone number, the address, and website of her publisher, which is New Century Press, down there. It's near San Diego. And it also lists Dr. Clark's websites, her clinic telephone number. I have no connection at all with Dr. Clark. She doesn't even know me. I don't sell her books. You're getting them from her public. I have no commercial connection to her whatsoever. I'm just an absolute fan of the quality of her writing and her work, and recognize its importance, and I want other people to become aware of it by getting the books. But if you study these books carefully, apply your information, you will become the master of your own health. And I don't care what the disease is, you can handle it better yourself, cure yourself at home, if you study these books, which are gold mines of super valuable information. She has thousands of testimonials to the efficacy of her information all over the web. There's entire books of just testimonials of how well her, there's many testimonials in her books right from the patients. But if you apply the information, and it does take studying, you can't, you know, do this in a weekend. I have all her books. I read them constantly. I'm learning new stuff all the time.
Yeah. Okay, so, Ken, we've got to wrap. We had a caller ask a question here. Seth just sent to me. This caller, I don't know if it's a man or a woman. We presume it's one or the other. What is the name for the frequencies that affect the brain and can control your mood?
Well, the brain is controlled by usually frequencies in the lower number range. For instance, the when we're sleeping, our brain goes into the delta and theta. Well, first theta, and then it sinks into delta, in which the frequency is at its lowest. It's down to 2, 3, 4 cycles. When we're kind of in a meditative, quiet mood, we could be an alpha, which is, you know, 6, 7, 8 hertz range. But when we're in our normal waking consciousness, we're in what's called beta, and that could be anywhere from, I'm guessing at the numbers, but I think it's around 14 hertz up to 35 hertz in that range. So the brain waves that are recorded on an EKG, for instance, will always be in this low frequency spectrum. And they've used a type of electronic generator that's called a brainwave generator. You can download this program software free from the internet, and you can wear a set of headphones, and you can produce these very low frequencies using headphones in a type of electronic beating, which is it's called when you I forget the word. It comes from radio. When you beat a one note at 100 cycles, for instance, and another note at 104 cycles, you get a difference note of 4 cycles in addition to the 2 original notes.
And yeah, anyway, that's where the frequencies converge and produce a harmonic.
Right, right. So in radio, you know, when they use a carrier wave to carry an audio signal and then strip away the carrier wave, that's called demodulation. Well, this beating activity of two frequencies produce both sum and subtractive difference. So anyway, you can produce these low waves, and you got to know what you're doing here, because actually you can get certain frequencies, and this goes into the tenths of hertz. For instance, I'm guessing at the numbers. So let's say 10.02 hertz. If you apply that frequency, you could produce negative feelings, anger, irritation, frustration, etc. So you need to know what you're doing with these frequencies. Some of these frequencies are right on the money, which will produce, you know, everyone knows the Schumann frequency is 7.8 hertz, make you feel very calm and relaxed and all that, but other numbers could upset you, so you got to study this before you try it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there is an entire field of study there. Bob Beck, in fact, was an expert in this area of using something called biofeedback to encourage the low frequency range of this frequency, and therefore you could put yourself into an alpha state, even go into a theta state consciously if you apply, if you practice, if you use these biofeedback mm-hmm. machines.
Well, we're out of time. I appreciate that response. In fact, while you were responding, I'm thinking, you know, we should do our next show on this HDTV conversion and what people can expect, because what you just described is highly likely that these frequencies are embedded in the audio tracks of what we'll be seeing on high-definition television.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm. Because they can put it there that your subconscious will pick it up and be susceptible to
it. By it, right.
Without you realizing.
Consciously aware of right. You're absolutely right, Don.
Yes, and I think that would make a fascinating show. This is interesting. I want to encourage people to go to your website. By the way, it's the eighth line down from the top or the fifth line from the bottom. Just right of center. the link for Dr. Hulda Clark. I want to recommend people go to your website, educate-yourself.org, and there's a lot of really, really interesting articles. You even have the Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part 6, posted there.
Yeah, so, that's a very important one.
So you may want to add that introduction that I mentioned at the top of the show, too.
Yes, I will.
For clarification. And check your typos.
Thank you.
Just kidding. Okay, Ken, I look forward to your next appearance on the show. We're at the end of this month, so I'm sure the next time you'll be back with us will be in the month of June.
Great.
I look forward to that time, and I want to thank you for all the work that you're doing and this wonderful information that people can check out for themselves. In your opinion, this is groundbreaking work, and people should take notice of it. So, I thank you. And to the listening audience, so it's time for us to say goodnight. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest, Ken Adachi. Again, visit his website at educate-yourself.org. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound. It was really, really clear tonight, especially after what we went through last night. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish you all a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.